Utility Fleet World. It's Kurt Moreland, Associate Publisher, with another edition of Under the UFP Hood. And I'm here live at the NTEA Work Truck Show. And I was in the press room and I bumped into KJ Johnson, and we had a conversation, and he was telling me that he's in the truck fitter industry and that he actually ventured off to provide a service for our market. And so I thought that would make great conversation for March for the NTEA Work Truck Show. So KJ, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Kurt. I really appreciate you inviting me over. It's kind of cool. We're hanging out in the media room and just comparing notes and found out that we have a lot in common. So yeah, that was awesome.
We do. Let's go back to your work truck upfitter days. Tell me a little bit about what you did and the type of trucks that you guys used to build.
So I'm getting a little old. I've been doing this for many, many years. I started off originally as a commercial account manager within the dealership world, selling fleet vehicles of all types. We sold them to municipalities. We sold them to construction companies, plumbers, electricians, everybody that needed any type of commercial vehicle. That's what I did. And went through the ranks within the dealership, hold various titles, various responsibilities, and then got an opportunity to leave the automotive industry for a period of time and went to work for a contractor, a federal contractor. And they were one of my largest clients. And when we went through that little recession, 2008-09, and I was going to take a job as a fleet manager for a corporate entity, he says, "Don't go to work for them. Come work for me." And I said, "Man, I can't even spell construction. Come on, I can't do that." And he goes, "Yeah, you're one of the smartest guys they know. We'll figure out a spot." So I went to work for them for 5-6 years and went through the ranks. And ultimately, my gift of gab got me promoted to the director of business development. And then I had an opportunity to go back into the automobile business as a GSM, GM of a Ford store, Mitsubishi Fuso. And then I decided, you know, I don't think I want to work at the dealership world. And I had an opportunity to go to work for a body company that manufactures vocational truck bodies, specifically crane and crane utility bodies and fuel and lube type bodies. And it was Summit Truck Equipment, part of the Transwest Empire. And that's where I've been for the last 10 years. And then a few months back, I decided to take a pet project of mine, a community that I was kind of a part of involving field mechanics. And I decided that that's what I wanted to do for the remainder of my days on this earth. So I resigned from my job and I went full time with Service Trucks USA. And that's where we are today.
Man, you know, you've got such a great background. You know, I love that you have the upfitter background. And then that you worked, you know, for a vendor, a truck body company. So we definitely speak the same language. You know, it sounds like you've been entrenched in our market. You know, just a quick question back to the upfitter days. Did you do any utility trucks or public works?
Absolutely, yeah. Part of the role when you're a fleet commercial account manager, we deal with municipalities and you know, public utilities and those type of contractors on a regular basis, whether it was a bucket truck or whether we're putting together a highway safety rigs, you know, with attenuators, or whether we are building welding rigs or, you know, trucks that carry potable water or non-potable water. We ran the full gamut of utility trucks, you know, over the course of my career. My subspecialty kind of took priority, where we focus almost exclusively on field service trucks and have cranes. But that was just because that's an area that I found that I was very, very comfortable in. Mm-hmm. And
And we're going to talk about your latest endeavor here really soon. But I always like to ask my guests about supply chain. So you probably worked in the industry before there were supply chain issues. You're probably aware of supply issues now. Tell me the difference, kind of a before and after, what your take is on the the truck building market, and what caused the supply chain, and when are we going to get back to normal, if we ever do?
Well, that's the million-dollar question that everybody's asking. My understanding as an upfitter, you know, we rely upon the chassis that we get in order to be able to build the body for our end user. And initially, it was a result of a lack of computer chips. That's the triggering event. And then I think that it was being affected by the COVID thing, because everybody was trying to protect their employees and do the right thing. And there was a lot of volatility in the marketplace. And then what I think happened was there was a acceleration of purchases. I think fear caused a hoarding mentality, and it caused people to overpurchase or buy more than they thought they might need. And that kind of created an artificial shortage in the marketplace. And then the final straw to the puzzle, I think, was attributed to labor. I think that when companies sent employees home, you know, they furloughed them, or, you know, they couldn't come to the office, I think a bunch of people just evaporated. They disappeared out of the workplace. They went away. And nobody knows where they all went. But millions of people exited the workforce, especially guys and gals that worked in factories that built stuff, and they left. And some of them started other businesses, some of them went back to school, some of them retired. We don't know where they all went. I think it created an acute labor shortage, and we are still dealing with that today.
Yeah, and I'm going to throw in a personal note, is that, you know, I was in Long Beach, California, and I missed the exit for the convention center, and I went over this big causeway, and when I landed on the other side, I was in the LA port area, and I actually drove around in there, and I watched some of these container ships come in, and I saw, now, I live by O'Hare Airport, which is a huge facility, but I mean, this LA port dwarfed, you know, made O'Hare look small in comparison.
Sure.
Rail yards, truck yards, I mean, had it all, and these containers stacked like Lego blocks everywhere.
Yeah.
So if anybody ever is in LA, just don't go to Hollywood. You know, go check out the port. I don't know if you've ever been over there before.
I went to school at Long Beach State and lived in Long Beach.
Kidding me.
I'm very familiar with it.
Wow. Yeah. So I really felt, after driving around there and seeing that, I really kind of felt how vulnerable, you know, the United States could be if that port or anything happened. So yeah, that, I wonder if that,
you know,
contributes
too. You're right. You know what? That's a good point, Kirk, because I forgot about the China component. Because when we had COVID, there was also a very steep decline in the amount of ships that were able to enter the port, you know, enter into the United States. And then we had some trade issues. And that was the last, I mean, it was like they say, it was the perfect storm for key commodities and logistics issues. It was just a perfect storm for, you know, interrupting our complete supply chain.
So what are you hearing out there? Are we ever going to get back to normal, or is this the new normal?
Well, again, the nice thing about being on your own is you can say dumb things. So I might say something dumb right now, so, but I only report to myself that this is my opinion. I believe we have already turned the corner. And I believe that we are kind of in a little mini recession in some areas. Mm-hmm. And I believe that we're going to start to see pressure on pricing. We're going to start to see contraction. We're going to start to see consolidation. And we're starting to go back to the old paradigm. I think things are starting slowly to return to normal. If you look at it, inflation is just killing everybody. Interest rates are double, almost triple what they were, you know, four years ago. And I think all of those pressures are putting a constraint on the marketplace. And I think we're going to start to see, you know, some contraction in pricing. I don't know that we'll ever get back to the good old days, but I do see that we're going to see an easing, and you're going to start to see some excess inventory. And I think that it won't always be a seller's market. I think we're going to gradually shift over. There's going to be some things that still are in back order. There's still some stuff that we're not going to be able to get for another year or two.
Wow.
But, you know, I think that we're already starting to see inventory starting to build up again. So,
wow, that's great insight. You know, I always like to include a celebrity story. And we, you know, at the NTEA Work Truck Show, you know, usually the truck body is the star. But there was a person on a Discovery Channel show, I think it was called Goldmine, and you had a chance to interview him. I did not, but you did. So do us the courtesy of telling us who was here and a little bit of insight about him and his truck.
So I'm glad and I'd be honored to share the story. He says, I was really excited. I was trolling him. I just followed him. I'm a big fan. He was on a show, Gold Rush, and since then he has another show on Discovery. And I knew him because my company I used to work for, we were an upfitter. So we've seen him in other events. I guess I just went up to him with my big puppy dog eyes and said, hey, would you please consider, you know, doing my show? And he, of course, is a very nice guy, and he said yes. But then to get him up here is a whole other story. You know, they can say yes, but they're getting pulled in so many different directions. And I was sitting here yesterday afternoon kind of having a little pity party going, yeah, my guy's not going to show up. And I said, well, go find him. So I went downstairs, and sure enough, I went and found him, and I just stood there next to him. And I said, hey, you know, Juan, are you going to have a few minutes? And he said, yeah, let's do it. And there we did it. We launched into it. And it was a great experience. So as far as Juan is concerned, he's a remarkable young man. I still consider him a young man because I'm old. And he's got four kids, and he's got a beautiful wife, and he's operating primarily out of Reno, Nevada. And he had two trucks in the show. So he had a great, big, beautiful Mack truck. And I believe I can't remember the brand of the other one. Ugh.
By the way, give us Juan's full name and the company he's with and the show that he's on.
So it's Juan Ibarra, and it's Ibarra Industries. And he was on Gold Rush, but I don't know the name of the new show. There's a brand new show on Discovery that he and another guy are part of, and they basically they're repairing mining equipment. So it was a derivative of an offshoot of Gold Rush.
I think I saw a postcard on that. Is it called like Gold Mine Rescue or something like that?
That's it. Yeah, that's it. Good job. Yeah, that's his new show.
Cool.
And the trucks that he had built were custom trucks built by a company called Palfinger. Mm-hmm. And he partnered with them. He was partnered with C-Tech. And he was also partnered with Mack. So I can understand why you might not have been able to get him, because he was probably the busiest guy in the whole show, because he was bouncing from booth to booth.
Yeah.
And he was just so gracious and kind and accommodating. And it was really helpful because, you know, your customers, your people, and my people are probably the one and the same. And they just love watching that show and seeing him overcome the challenges that he overcomes. And to get a chance to understand how he puts his trucks together and the amount of forethought that he puts into it and how he, you know, he's working in a very harsh environment, you know, thousands of miles away from his home. He only gets one chance to do it right. You know, it's not as if he can go to, you know, the local Pep Boys and, you know, pick up what he needs, you know.
Uh-huh. So he doesn't work just in Reno, Nevada. He goes all over.
Yeah, the shows that he does are seasonal. And he tends to head up to the gold mine area up in Alaska.
Yeah.
And that's where he does a lot of his work. Now, I found it really interesting that he started off as a plumber. And Ibarra Industries still has a whole plumbing division, and they still do, you know, that type of work as well. So he's a very well-diversified and accomplished field service professional. He's able to work on all kinds of equipment and, you know, he's not afraid of a challenge, you know. Roll his sleeves up and get it done.
So. Yeah, so we all got to check out the TV show.
Yep.
Now that we're here. Yeah, I don't know if you've ever heard or been to the SEMA show. We are media partners with them, and we will be there in, I think, the first week of November. But they do a really good job of bringing a lot of these cable TV stars to the show and race car drivers. And this is the first time I can remember at NTEA Work Truck having somebody from that arena here. And I admit it, it has quite a bit of excitement.
It's funny you mention that. I agree 100%. And normally you're right. The truck is the star of the show, you know, and I've been a part of a company that had some pretty outstanding trucks and shows. You know, we garnered a lot of attention, but, you know, having a real live person there and being able to share insights and anecdotes and, you know, stories about his family was wonderful.
So let's talk about your passion. Let's talk about service trucks, spelled T-R-U-X. At the end, and tell me how you started this company and your passion for it.
So it came about because I saw some serious problems within the industry. So we'll back up to the point when I went to work for the company, which is Summit Truck Bodies, went to work for them. This was a new world because they're one of the few manufacturers that goes to market direct. So not only are we the manufacturer, we actually sell the final product to the end user. And that differs from most of our competitors. Most of our competitors used a distributor model. So they sell to a distributor or a dealer. They didn't sell directly to the end user. So that put me, you know, belly to belly with a bunch of end users. And where I found that my passion was is working with emerging, smaller, independent, you know, guys. For whatever reason, you know, working with the great big dealer groups, you know, the Caterpillar, the Komatsus, and the John Deere, you know, big franchise dealer, it was fun to talk to those guys, but the amount of time I'd have to put in to get a sale seemed disproportionately, you know, out of balance. And I need immediate gratitude. I like selling stuff now. And when I went to work for Summit, we had lots of inventory on the ground. And that's kind of the environment that I had at the dealership. So I was very comfortable in that environment. And I would just go meet people and start talking to them. And then over the years, a lot of those customers became really good friends, you know. And when you're doing this type of work, you get a chance to meet the wives, you meet the kids, you know, you meet the brothers and sisters and grandmothers and grandfathers, because it's a family affair quite often. And that relationship built over time. And first you sell them one truck, and then a couple of years later you sell them another one, and then pretty soon, you know, they've got 3, 4, 5, 10 of your trucks, you right. know, in their inventory. And I love that part. But what I started noticing is that there was a lack of knowledge within the community on key aspects of running a small business. They lacked financial acumen. They didn't understand insurance, you know, to the degree that I thought was, you know, critical for their success. And I found myself counseling, just volunteering my time and helping them learn more about their businesses. And then I became extremely frustrated with the way that service trucks were sold, bought and sold in the marketplace.
Okay.
I saw there was a lot of exploitation going on. And I also saw that there was a lot of time wasting. It was a super inefficient model. I said, you know, if I could create a community and I can get a subscription basis, that would cover my nut, you know, my monthly income need, and I could basically devote my time to helping this community grow. And I'd be talking about it, you know, and then one day I was talking to one of my customers, a friend of mine, his name's Kevin Carl. I want to give the boy a shout out because Kevin's one of my boys. And he goes, yeah, you should go on Facebook. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to go on Facebook. That's stupid. I'm not gonna, Facebook's dumb. And he goes, no, Kenny, there's these groups and you should try it. And so he got me in and he sent me an invite. Even though I'm not a mechanic and I don't own a service truck, I sell them. He got me in the group. And of course, I immediately got kicked out because I'm a salesman. We don't need any salesmen. And they kicked me out. Went back to the group owner and said, hey, they kicked me out. He goes, okay, I'll get you back in. I got back in, got kicked out again. So about the third time I'm in, I'm all scared because I don't want to engage. I don't want to say anything. I just changed my style. I just started looking for topics, threads within the group discussion that I thought I could contribute to, that I could add value. And I did, you know, I know a lot of stuff about a lot of things, and I'd pipe in and offer information and look things up. And I didn't have much of a life, so I'd do it 2 o'clock in the morning. I'd be responding. And over time, I built a level of trust and rapport with these groups. And I helped several of the groups grow from 10,000 members all the way up to 60, 70,000 members, because we were providing really good information within this community.
Wow.
Well, Facebook has challenges, and I had some concerns about privacy, and I thought maybe I could do this and I could move this to a different platform where we could provide a little bit more safety, a little bit more security, and have a better control over the content. So I hatched this idea about Service Trucks USA, and I've been working on it ever since. And so the goal now is to advocate for the field mechanic community. I see myself as the Costco or AAA for service truck guys, and my job is to bring them value. I bring them information, you know, try and give them a little entertainment, try and get them some educational value, and then I grind the living snot out of people, and I bring those deals to my boys, you know, and that's my deal. I just grind people. So I can see myself in the not-too-distant future acting almost like a clearinghouse. So if a dealership has excess inventory and they don't want to disrupt the market, they're going to come to me because they want to get to my members, and then I'm going to present those deals to my members so that they can take advantage of them and protect their privacy and advocate for them. So they don't have to talk to every Tom, Dick, and Harry. Everybody that'll be on the platform will be vetted, you know, by my organization, and then we will advocate staunchly for them. And that's the premise behind Service Trucks USA.
Yeah, and the service trucks, they're the unsung heroes. You know, they keep all the other trucks and construction equipment going. But just to clarify, Service Trucks, TRUX USA, is it an app? Is it a magazine? Is it a form of media are these?
It's all three. So,
okay.
Service Trucks USA is the podcast.
Okay.
So that's the multimedia. So Service Trucks USA has a YouTube channel. It has a podcast and has various multimedia. So that's the content, entertainment content value. I call it storytelling. You know, my goal is to tell stories. We want to make the vendors that they deal with on a daily basis, we want them to know that they're human beings, they got kids, they got families, you know, and they're not the evil enemy. So we personalize the vendors, and then I have a desire to tell the stories of as many of these wonderful, professional, family-oriented business owners as I can, and I seek out the best stories and tell their stories. I call one of my series, it's called Master Series, where I seek out, you know, professional shop owners, mechanics have been doing it for 30 plus years, and I want to give them their 15 minutes of sunshine to where they can tell their story and hopefully impart some of their knowledge on a younger generation. I also want to get a different group of people that make turning wrenches sexy, bro. I want to make it sexy, you know? I want these guys to get the good-looking women, you know? I want them to have it. And so they need a salesperson. I'm gonna be their advocate. I'm gonna make turning wrenches, getting dirt under your fingernails. I'm gonna make that sexy. So that's one of the goals. And then lastly, from the entertainment part of it, is my goal is to get them the knowledge that they need so that they can make better decisions. So that's the multimedia aspect of it. The app part is I've developed an application that allows the service truck community to create a physical record of their truck and have that information readily available to assist them in taking care of it, maintaining it, buying it, and or selling it. And it's a proprietary application that is only available to members of the community. And that's that part of it. And
so if I want to be a member of your community, is there a fee for that? Or are you sponsored by advertising or both?
So currently the business model, again, we're just getting started. We're just ramping up. But currently We have three levels of membership. We have apprentice, journeyman, and master. So the each one has a cost, but for the apprentice, I give you a coupon and that wipes out the cost, so it's zero. Doesn't cost you anything.
Wow.
So that's the, and then the middle level is a small annual fee. And then the upper level is right now $300 a year. And it, and my promise to them is, if you don't see at least $300 of value per year, then, you know, quit. You know, you can jump out because I didn't do my job.
Money back guarantee. That's cool.
Guaranteed. And if you're not happy, you know, there's no long-term commitments. We know we're not trying to get rich off you. All that money does is it pays for additional staff to provide the services that these guys need. A lot of them don't know that they need what we're going to provide, but they'll learn as they come into the program and they join. They're going to see how cool it is to have advocacy on their behalf. They'll come to learn, I'm a pretty shrewd negotiator and I'm going to negotiate some great deals on their behalf. So I'm confident that once they come into the community, they're going to be happy and they're going to, and it'll just like paying your utility bill. And then I have a special offer when we first get started. There's a provision where they can come in as a lifetime member. There's a limited number of these slots. And they can come in for a flat fee of $497, and they never have to pay another dues ever again.
Wow!
But I have enough testimonials now,
yeah,
and that there's a lot of customers that have used the service already and that have benefited from it. So I think it's going to be worthwhile.
Yeah, tell me about the app. So do you have to pay for the app, or is that
the app is included with your membership? The app is included with your membership. And what it does is it gives you power over your data, your vehicle. It gives you the power. Because right now, everybody should have privacy concerns. You know, data privacy is critical. And, you know, going on everybody's website to inquire about a part or service is starting to get a little problematic, you know, especially when you're giving credit card information. So I think I came up with a better solution. It remains to be seen if this is going to work. But I built it, you know, I built, and that's the application, and we think it's gonna be disruptive. Our goal is for it to be disruptive, and we want to put more money in our service truck owner's pocket. Because right now there's a whole bunch of people extracting profit on the food chain. Well, I'm on their team now. Now they got me working for them and not trying to take money from them. And this tool will give them the ability to hang on to more of their money and facilitate the sale, transfer, procurement, disposal, maintenance, refurbishment. It will be handled through platform.
Yeah, and on the privacy and security or cybersecurity, be a good time to mention that our magazine company just launched our first issue of Utility Security.
Oh, wow.
Which is dedicated to information to help protect the workers in the field, cybersecurity, substations, and headquarters. So people can subscribe to that by going to utilitysecurity.com. Brand new magazine just coming out in line with what you were talking about.
I can see where your magazine is going to provide tremendous value, you know, for your readership base, because I mean, security is an important factor. You know, it's definitely something we need to be cognizant of at all times.
Yeah. So if I want to become a member, how do I reach out to you? How do I do that?
Well, because I didn't hire a big marketing agency, it's really simple. There's Service Trucks USA. That's the multimedia.
And by the way, trucks is spelled T-R-U-X.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then Service Trucks without the USA is the directory.
Okay.
So that's it. So Service Trucks USA is media, podcasts, all that good stuff. Service Trucks is the directory. That's where the garage app will be. That's where the community directory. And let me add a little bit more about the directory. So people are probably familiar with, you know, apps like Angie's List and Thumbtack and all those types of things. And what I've noticed is that putting all your information within Google means you don't really have control over who calls you as a vendor, you know, as a service provider. And there's times when you just don't want that particular client. You know, they're either geographically undesirable, or perhaps they are a client that doesn't really meet your ideal client profile. So another aspect of the directory that we addressed is this directory functions more like a dating app. It works like a dating app. So you list...
I have a daughter in her 20s, so I know all about the dating apps.
Okay.
Not for personally, but through her.
Okay, Kurt, I believe you. So the idea behind this function on the directory is that we sort by your preferences, your capabilities, your skill, the equipment that you work on, the areas that you work on. We define all of those, and we put that in a searchable database. Mm-hmm. So when you're looking for somebody that provides these services, you put in those search parameters, and then the database will give you a result based upon the match, the capability of matching. What makes it different is if you only want to deal with people within a certain geographic region as a customer, as a vendor, as a mechanic, you can just say that these are the only areas that people can find me. If they don't fall into this geographic preference, mm-hmm. then nobody can see it. So it's invisible to anyone outside that group, which means that you're not wasting your time talking to people that are not within your ideal parameter. The same searchable parameters could be based upon price ranges. Like if you're charging $180 an hour, there's no point in talking to a client that thinks that your services are only worth $110 an hour. And so you can eliminate, you know, it helps both the looker and the lister, and it helps them both sort through the list, the search function. Another component is it could function as a matching service because there's such a shortage of skilled tradesmen. So now if you are working in the upper Midwest and you've gone through one too many winters and you've had aspirations to possibly relocate to a warmer climate, but you don't know anybody in that locale. You never even thought about it. Well, now you can put your information in our database, in our directory, and you can make your profile searchable, and it will indicate to potential employers that you are considering it, and then you can pre-select the regions that you're willing to relocate. So if you're not gonna go to Florida, you can block Florida. If you're not going to go to California, you can block California so that only those employers that were within the geographic range that appeal to you, only those people can see you. And that app's built. That function's there now. We can do that right now.
Sounds like our podcast listeners, our readers, will have a lot to explore on servicetrucks, TRUX.com or
Service Trucks USA. We cross-reference you back and forth.
And I imagine for your YouTube channel as well.
The YouTube channel, we're just building up content now because, you know, there's so much stuff to learn, you know, when you're trying to go out on your own. And our goal is just to do it one step at a time and, you know, fail until I don't, right? Just keep grinding.
What do they say? Fake it till you make it, right?
There you go, brother. I appreciate you. Thank you so much for taking the time to, you know, let me chat about the business, and I hope you continue to have great success with your podcast as well.
Thank you. I appreciate that from one podcaster to another. So, yeah, I want to thank my guest, KJ Johnson of Service Trucks USA, and you are located out of New Braunfels, Texas.
I've moved from New Braunfels now, but I still have my office there, but I'm in Bastrop, and I'm a Texas boy. I got my Texas card a few years ago after going through quarantine for 20 years from California. I've been cleared, and I've got my official Stetson, you know, hat, my cowboy hat. I got my boots. I got my belt buckle. I am now officially 100% Texan certified.
Well, I like to hear that, and I love Texas because I love the pride that people who live in Texas have, the pride in their state. So, I'm just going to sign off thanking you again for being our guest, and just remind all of our listeners and our UFP readers out there to roll safe.
Amen to that, and thank you for your time.
Thank you for your time, brother.
The views, information, and opinions expressed during this podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of Utility Business Media and its employees. It is strongly recommended that you discuss any actions or policy changes with your company management prior to implementing.